I'd like to have some time for questions and a bit of discussion. So that's our plan. Just to roll out map out the next few weeks for you as well. So next Sunday, Alex West is going to be speaking to us about fours and small groups for accountability and walking with each other in a kind of an intimate, powerful way. And we're going to be probably getting into that a bit more next term. So it's slightly a foretaste of next term. But it's something that is importantly runs parallel to our worshipping communities. That's the 22nd. And the 29th, we've got our Cambodia team feeding back to us about their trip. So we'll be hearing to talk about Cambodia. Then on the 7th, we've got, we've got a prayer Sunday. That'll be the third, I think, of our prayer Sundays that Silas and Annie are running, as we are a church that's integrated, double helix, sort of church and prayer center together. So we've got a prayer Sunday then. And then we've got our carol service on the 13th of December, and we're kind of getting into the Christmas zone. So that's the next few weeks. If you're new to Hope, we're on a journey of rolling out what we're calling worshipping communities, and we'll explain that a bit more as we go along. Over to you, Alice.
Last week Helen spoke on community as witness, and one of the things she highlighted, which was almost like articulated in one word, what we've been trying to articulate for ages, is that in you are the light of the world, which Jesus says to his disciples and first the crowds of followers. The you is plural. So it's when people see us in our relationships and in our plurality and our togetherness that we are light. So we can individually be light, but the power is in our agreement and our love for each other across demographic and age and culture and so on, just a love that shows a kingdom that's coming, a governance of peace that is very different to anything that this world and our training can offer. And I'll read those words again and sort of dig a bit deeper into another word, C-S-E-E, today. So Jesus says in Matthew 5, if anyone wants to find it, Matthew 5, verse 14. He's started very powerful healing ministry where people are literally delivered from things and spirits that have tormented them all their lives. Their hearts are mended. The diseases that in some ways are the manifestation of that stuff, brokenheartedness and lies, are being healed. And so crowds are finding him. And he goes up and he starts teaching. And quite early on in this teaching, it's very famous. It's called the Beatitudes because it's about the way, if you like, of blessing or favor in life. Quite early on, he says to those who follow him, you, plural, are the salt of the earth. You, plural, are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. And if you think of a town, it has lots of different bits to it, streets and houses and lamps and roads and gardens. A town is made up of many different things, and we are that town which brings light in darkness, in our togetherness. So you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light, which again, plural, shine before others, so that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So something happens when we are as we're designed to be. There's no striving here, that's just being ourselves. But there's it brings realignment and a change of mindset to the people around. One of these early followers who would have heard this teaching recorded in Matthew is Peter, one of Jesus' closest disciples. And he writes a letter and he says a very, very similar phrase, almost like he's recounting a few years on Jesus' exact words. So if we could go to 1 Peter 2, this is nearer the end of the Bible. Again, I'm reading it in the version I'm using so you can see this mirror, this echo. 1 Peter 2:11. Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. There's always a rhythm of abstaining from things which destroy us and engaging with things which give life. He never asks us to abstain from something which he then doesn't give us abundantly more to step into, because power abhors a vacuum. So we are constantly designed to be engaged in building kingdom all the time. Everything we do is a plumb line. This is about building kingdom. And if we can't 100% say we're doing that, then we have to think, what are we doing? Because we're always building. We're always building. Always building something. So we abstain from the things which destroy us. And then we enter in a way of life, live such good lives among the pagans. Now, pagans in this version isn't a derogatory term. It's a descriptive term of the people in the Greco-Roman culture that worshipped other gods. They worship with attached with myths and so on. We've probably heard of some of them. So they have a very worshipping spiritual life, but their gods are very small. They're very acrimonious. I don't know if you know much about Greco-Roman culture. Extraordinarily small-minded, almost the worst of human behavior worshipped. So you live among them, this goodness, and it talks about good deeds as well. Part of the movement around the revivals of the 18th, 19th century, it precipitated reformation of society and movements into things like the abolition of the slave trade, was this phrase, making goodness fashionable. It's compelling to live a life where everything you do is good and bears fruit. It's just a compelling way to live. It's an attractive way to live. It's an appropriate way to live. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, because jealousy might come up, or frustration, or it might expose people's own insignificance or insecurity or orphan-spirited nature, things come up and there'll be accusations. They may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So something's happening in these two readings. We go back to Matthew, let your light shine before others. Just let it shine. Don't strive. Don't do anything else other than who you are. Be who you are. That light will shine that they may see your good deeds. Do you hear that repeated phrase? Jesus teaches it. Matthew records it. Peter, one of Jesus' followers, says it again. They may see your good deeds. And what happens is a mindset change. They glorify God on the day he visits us. Our design as created beings is to glorify God. That gives us fullness of life. We are incredibly, how God has made humanity is incredibly powerful. And we see our, you know, technological and scientific advantages and advances. Just incredibly powerful. But there is this fundamental distinction which will never go, which we are created and he is creator. We always have to use something to make something. Even a clone, we have to use a piece of something. But he is ex nihilo, which is the Latin, out of nothing he creates. He is fundamentally distinct, and our life comes from worshipping and acknowledging that and saying yes. So rather than the pagan culture making gods in our image, we have to shift and simply worship him for who he is. He's not changing, and to come into life, we change. And this is what happens, really simply. When we live the life we're designed to live, people's mindsets change. We know that we're light if people around us start to either accuse us of doing wrong or start to worship God, or hopefully and ideally, ultimately both. So this word see is the one I want to quickly drill down on. It's not a casual glance. Oh, I know I've got a Christian in the office somewhere, but I don't really think about them very much. The word for see, and it's just really helpfully interprets it here, are deeds that can be seen to be good. The Greek word translated see refers to a careful watching over a period of time. Do you feel that? Do you feel the weight of that? There is a way of life that we can have which can be watched over a period of time. And in that watching and careful observation of how we are as light together, a conversion, a mindset change happens, a repentance, a metanoia, a change of life happens to those around us. So what are they carefully observing? And in some ways we do this, we're instructed to do this with raising up leaders. Leaders must first be tested. We have to watch how we ourselves respond, but also how people respond. For example, if they go through a financial crisis, we are being carefully observed. How are we walking through that? Do we go into fear and anxiety and panic? Or do we just absolutely, non-negotiably say, I know God's good, I know he provides, I know there's going to be a breakthrough, I will weep about it, I will walk very closely with two or three people about it, I will get, you know, real about how I feel, because I'm facing my orphan spiritedness in this. I'm facing a disconnection in my relationship with God, but I'm going to stand and see that breakthrough because of his goodness. It's a financial crisis. People watch. We are carefully observed appropriately. It's right. If it's true, we need to come through as gold in those tests. Say we're treated very badly by someone and it's a public thing or public within our sphere, say our family or our work situation. We are watched. Do we bless that person? Is our knee-jerk response to cry out for mercy and honour because Jesus was treated very badly, but his knee-jerk response was forgiveness, which doesn't mean, which is an acknowledgement of injustice, but it's a releasing of mercy knowing we've received the same. So when we're treated badly. So in these situations in our life that are just part of life, they're just part of what happens. Bad things happen, sad things happen, very confusing things happen. We are watched. And as a result of that, watching and careful observation over a period of time, there comes a moment where people see something and go, do you know what? I think they're the real thing. We have to earn people's respect and trust. We have to let people be so close to us that they see that. And Chris will be now we'll be looking at worshipping communities, but this is the vision we have, is that as believers, you, not individuals being transparent, but as believers walking together, we allow people to come in and walk with us and watch us. Because at one level, at some level, there will be people who just hunger and thirst for truth and will go, I want what they've got, but they've got to see it. They've got to be close enough to know about our financial crisis. They've got to be close enough to know how badly we're treated by someone and to know our response. But we invite people in, and the fruit is a worshipping mindset, a reconnectedness with our Creator, which is the only act of true worship.
Thanks, Alice. Great. So worshiping communities really are the kind of how we do this. I want to give you some examples this morning of what some of these worshiping communities are looking like so far. And we've kind of got, this is our sort of planning board over here. We've got one that's kind of live, quite fresh, two that are forming and transforming, and one that's an idea that we're kind of chewing over quite seriously, and then other ideas. I want to just draw them as, we've got this picture behind us. I was considering as we were worshipping, can I draw on Richard's boats with some chalk? But I think I'll draw my own instead. So this is it's not a very good drawing, is it? Imagine that's one of these nice boats just here. And we're going to call this first one Explore. Can you show us the PowerPoint, please, Michael? So Alice and I, we have children who are at Hot Wells Primary School over the road, and some friends of ours, Lee and Mary Barnes, Lee's the vicar of Holy Trinity Hot Wells, just over there, and they also have children at Hot Wells Primary School. So that's we live just sort of up the hill there. So our life kind of operates in this sort of triangle of about 100 metres. But this is our local community, people that we're getting to know and getting to love through the school. And so for our worshipping community, what we're aiming to do is provide a space where we can connect with these people and explore Jesus together for people who want to. So the vision of Explore is parents and children exploring Jesus together. That's actually quite a new thing for us. So we tend to pray with our kids and read the Bible to them and so on. But actually, discovering Jesus together with them, you know, alongside, is something that we haven't really done very much. But that's the kind of vision of Explore, and we're really enjoying doing it. So some photographs here. We've only had about maybe 4 sessions so far. We meet on a Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock, at the Vicarage for Holy Trinity. We have a sort of an hour that's a sort of structured time, and then it's an open house thing afterwards. So this is Explore, and we're kind of learning as we go along. We're enjoying getting to know people. We've got people in the school saying, "Hey, can we come along?" And so we're creating this space, which is an opportunity for people who are interested in Jesus to connect in a setting that isn't necessarily a church service. Maybe it's a bit too formal or a bit too distant. Jamie and Lucy, I've asked if you can just pop up and say a quick something about your worshipping community. This would be good to get a flavour of this. Do you want to start, Liz?
So we weren't really a worship. Well, we are now, I think. We're just a life group, and I guess this time a year ago, there was about 8 of us, because we just branched from another one, because we were always branching. We got bigger, we branch. And then literally within the last year, we've just doubled in size, and there's now 16 of us that come, and we meet every other week. And I guess we don't really have a thing that we do. We just hang out and we eat together, and we're kind of, like Alice is talking about, we're really transparent with one another, and we really see each other as family. And it's a really amazing way for people who are new to Hope, especially because Hope's getting bigger, when they come along, if you kind of bring them into a worshipping community, it's a really great way for them to feel like they're becoming part of the family in that way, if that makes sense. So the people that have come kind of this last year have come because they felt they've come to the life group, and they felt, wow, this is a family, and I really feel like I'm loved and I'm accepted. And that's what we really try and do. We kind of try and just, whoever comes along our way, just say, come along and come get involved. So within that, we've kind of, there's been like little branches of kind of missional communities that have been happening. So there's been just, we've kind of working together, thinking of different ideas. So some people were kind of thinking of wanting to go into some hospitals and pray in some hospitals. And there's kind of a hockey thing going on. And then Jamie and his friends are doing something else, which he'll tell you about now.
Thanks, Lucy. So one of the things that Lucy was mentioning there, me and a few other guys from the life group, we go along to something called Cafe Casa. Some of you might have seen it. It's on the Bear Pit, right up the road from Debenhams. And there's a guy called Patrick Chase who's been faithless in his devotion to seeing God's heart extended to those in our society that are often on the fringes. So it's a time that between 1 in 4, a load of guys who are homeless, or in dire straits, or whatever their situation, come along. It's a time that we kind of run through some of the gospel with them. We've got prayer and worship if there's anything that they want to kind of go through or run through, which is really awesome. And it's really started to build momentum in the last few months. It's gone, like I say, from just Patrick to a load of other people getting around him to see this actually, this blessing put to those that we'd often just walk by. And I think the reason that we kind of really wanted to get involved in it we really wanted to just see the heart of God extended to those that we would otherwise, you know, walk on by. There was something that Sarah said that struck me really profoundly. It was, you know, what would we do if we found our own brother or sister lying on the streets? You know, we'd have that choice in that moment to walk on by. Or is it not that compassion that God gives us to actually extend that invitation, to extend that hand to someone that is in need? And so for us, it's about seeing, you know, a very prosperous city extend that comfort and that love and security to those that are also find themselves on the fringes.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. I wanted to give you an insight into their group. So Jonathan and Elise are part of that gang, and Sarah's just there. Who else is in that worshipping community? Great, you guys. Yep, that's cool. Great. Love it. Others are doing youth and various sorts of things. But what I love about this group is they don't just hang out on I think it's a Thursday night you meet, isn't it? But through the week, there's a sense of you being a community, people who love, you know, do things together on the weekends and at various times. And it's very much a community. And when I've joined you once for one of your evenings, and worship is really at the heart of who you are. And then, so the whole aim of worshipping community is to connect in with an outward focus, whether it's a network or a neighbourhood. And with this group, they're yet to have a name beyond Josh and Jess's group. But they've kind of got, I guess they kind of got multiple directions that this boat goes. So there's the Cafe Casa direction. There's some praying in hospitals. And then there's hockey stuff beginning. And then and this kind of workplace as well. So it's a community with an outward focused vision and visions, but very much a place to bring others into. Just a couple of other ones to bring your attention to. So youth. So Hugh and Susie are helping the youth team move into being a worshipping community. And that's the idea there is that the youth team, those who are part of the youth leadership team, and together with the youth, are again building this place of being a community of worshippers. And then particularly the youth friends and so on at school and in those sort of places are the people that they're connecting with outside. And then very new, it's Pam's there. Hey, Pam, just going to mention you. So Pam is looking at exploring starting a dance worshipping community, maybe using the crypt space as a venue for that. So that's another one that's informational. And then we got talk as well about something over in Backwell, something in BS3, some sort of group around exercise, running, triathlons, Ironmans, I don't know. Some stuff around mums, young mums, and around making meals for the community. So there's lots of ideas here that are brewing. And you know, this is learning stages, learning early stages of this. So it's exciting. Love to hear any questions. Anyone got any questions, any things that jump out at you thinking about this? It's a community learning experience. Carla's getting into the dance thing. That's good. Xanthi.
Is part of your vision for each member, each person that comes to Hope, to be in a 3 or 4 and in a worshipping community?
Yeah. And I think if we go to the sort of big, what's the principle, what's the biggest thing? The biggest thing, I think, we talked at the beginning of this term about up, in and out, living in these three dimensions as Christians. Up, being worshippers of Jesus. In, being connected with the body. And out, sharing the message of Jesus and the love of Jesus with other people. And I think that, in essence, that's the kind of goal, is that we live as balanced disciples. And the sense of what the Lord said to us as a church is that over the past 8 years or so, we've really grown on the in and on the up. And this is a bit, and this season for us as a church is learning to grow in the out stuff more. And so, so worshipping community is being the primary vehicle for us moving into the out. And yeah, threes and fours being probably a really key thing for the in and for us walking. We had a season about 5 or 6 years ago when we had these accountability groups in Hope, again, of threes and fours, and people really found those to be sort of powerhouses for growth. But it's the principle rather than the rule, I think, is kind of key. So it may be that people have an accountability setting that is different to necessarily a 3 or a 4. It's not about necessarily ticking those boxes, but about making sure we're living in that zone. Yep. Thanks. Other questions? Is this an exciting thing for people? Is it a rather dull thing for people? Is it challenging? Is it, Rachel? Cool. Great, Jonathan.
It's not really a question, but something which really helped me towards the direction the Lord has got for me in worshipping communities is simply to ask Him how He sees me. And once I had that picture, I could just thunder down the right road, knowing it's who I was made to be, rather than is this the right thing. Such like.
That's great, thank you. That's really key, is that this is organic and this is natural, and it fits in with normal life. And it's about finding that sphere. A lot of you lead very busy lives with workplaces and so on. This isn't about creating an extra sort of bolt-on set of groups that you do on top. It's about really seeing how can we, as communities of Christians, be intentional about our sharing our faith and so on and ministering, you know, where we are. I think that's really key. Great.
Okay, I'll just stand here. When we were worshipping earlier, I had a picture. I didn't know what they were talking about this morning, but it just was so fitting that I thought I'd better share it. So I had a picture of new hearts being given to everybody with Jesus at the centre. And the hearts all look the same, but they have their own rhythm. And people with hearts that beat to the same rhythm are drawn together. And the sound of that rhythm increases and draws other people in. Which sounds a bit like you're 8 becoming 16. And as groups with like rhythms meet together with other groups with like rhythms, there's this wonderful music made which is harmonious as a combination of the rhythms together, which is this beautiful sound glorifying God. The rhythms in each of the hearts is effortless. It's the rhythm that God has made to beat within each of us. And coming together with others in agreement makes it stronger and more compelling. Some people recognize that the rhythm in their heart is different, but they seek others with the same rhythm, and like magnets, they're drawn together.
Thanks, Casey.
Cool. I also had a couple of pictures when Alice was speaking, which I thought just might help to illustrate some of the things that she was saying. So, and we were saying about you, plural, are light. Just had the picture of like pixels, so in a, like a screen, the whole picture is made up of lots of individual little pixels, and obviously like one little pixel on its own isn't much good, but when you see the whole picture, that's like what we're like as a church, so each one of us is like a pixel. And then similarly with the salt one, just like almost like, you know, one grain of salt doesn't really do very much. You need quite a lot more of that to kind of flavour the food. And then also just about kind of being called to almost be like the spirit level in our workplaces. So like the little bubble is the way that you tell whether things are straight. And when things get, it can be quite tempting. I've done stuff before where I've been putting things up on walls and they've been getting wonky and I've just been doing it on my own. But then I think often people around us get a bit fed up with things being wonky in their lives and sort of start glancing over at what we're doing and kind of like checking almost because we're that spirit level of like straightness in our workplaces or wherever we are.
Love it. Thanks, Sarah. Yes, Marvin. Go for it.
I suppose my question would be, is there within this, is there a sense of what the end state would look like as to what we're pointing at? So we can talk about getting our relationships, but what would the community we end up as think, sound, operate like, and feel like? And then does that extend to the city as well? So what's the purpose? So there is something about the purpose for us getting our relationship right with God. But I've always thought when as a church, when we started talking about original design and so forth, it's not just about us as individuals, it's about the city. So the purpose for us as a community, you know, what we end up looking like, how does that extend over into what the end game for Bristol is?
Love it. Big picture. And that's great, Marvin. Thank you. So, what's the aim of this? What's the vision? And what's the purpose? I think the purpose is that, and it ties in with original design and these things, is that God has created each one of us to shine, shine corporate, shine as a group. But He's created each of us unique, as we know and have discovered, haven't we? With amazing gifts and amazing purpose. And I think this is partly this is about creating a structure that facilitates that. So the Chinese, just a little thing, the Chinese church in, telling Tom this the other day, in 1960, when Chairman Mao came to power and began the Cultural Revolution, was about 2 million people going to church, 2 million Chinese, just sort of church attendees. And Chairman Mao began the sort of systemic wiping out of all religion and everything else. So all the top leaders in the Chinese church were put in jail. Most of them were killed, actually. The top layer were killed. Next tier down were put in jail. All the foreign Christian missionaries and so on were deported, kicked out of the country, banned from coming back. So China was left with a sort of decimated church, no sort of trained leaders or theologically trained people, but there was this remnant of people who'd become Christians. And so what was expected in the 80s after the Cultural Revolution finished was that the Westerners would come in and find a sort of decimated Chinese church. Would there be anything left? They came back in the 80s and they found that the church was 60 million people in the 80s and growing at a phenomenal rate. I think what happened there, you know, some of the analysis has been saying that actually within each of us as believers, we have this kingdom of God as a little seed inside us. And it's about creating the environment whereby that can grow and that can become a tree and can change the world. And so and what this is about is what we're doing here on a Sunday all together is wonderful. It's great to come together to corporately be like this. It's great that the things that we do around the city in our lives and in our, and this is about creating structures whereby we can blossom more and be more fully who we are and be more fully transformational in our settings. So what's the dream of this? The dream of this, Marv, is that each of us is fully alive in who we are in Jesus Christ, fully released in partnership with our communities and friends and so on to be bringing transformation to the societies around us. So my dream is that there are, over time, so what have we got? Sort of four things happening already, another five ideas. Let's say that by the end of next year, let's say we've got five, six, I don't know, eight worshipping communities that are happening. My dream is that they continue to flourish. What's in Josh and Jess's group right now is a wonderful, powerful community that people want to be in and want to hang out with. And there are people of faith that are seeing things happen in their lives as they're doing engaging in the city in different ways. And so my dream is for an explosion of that, really. Some of these might grow so large they become churches over time. Some of these might become so large they become significant political movements, like the Clapham sect, for example. So we might have some political worshipping communities. We might have all sorts of different things happening. The potential for this is enormous. And actually, there are churches using these structures. They're often called missional communities. Churches using these structures around the UK and around the world, actually. And these are the fastest growing churches around the world, fastest growing churches in Europe. Massive, enormous church planting movements. So it's about creating structures and ways that we can just go for it as a church. We need to finish shortly, but Miles, go on. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mark. Nice to see you. How you doing? Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love that. I'd love to be out of a job. Actually, I really would. So, in terms of how I see this, my role, I think of myself as being the conductor of an orchestra. I'm standing here. You're the orchestra. You're the musicians. My job is to help you to be heard as the beautiful musician that you are. Help you to make beautiful music as a group. And maybe in time, no longer need to be a conductor, and that's cool with me. But no, I really think this is the thing I think Alice and my role for now, we're seeing ourselves as sort of coaches, I guess, in helping to launch these communities, helping to steer them, helping to shape them and sowing into them. Our Sundays like this will be times of coming together, celebrating what's going on, inspiring, hearing testimonies, praying for each other and so on. So yes, our role will probably change more into maybe more of a sort of a coaching coming alongside role, and maybe it will become redundant altogether, which would be great. Yeah, we better stop. Did you have something, sir? Yep. Yeah. So Sarah's question was, should we scrap Sundays to free up some time? And I would say not yet. Maybe one day, a long way down the line. But I think our Sundays is key for coming together to worship Jesus as a larger community and for this corporate identity of who we are as Hope. We've got these key values as a church, haven't we? We're a church for people on the margins. We're a prayer centre for the city. We're a church that loves children. And a lot of that stuff is kind of expressed in our kind of corporate identity here on a Sunday. Okay, we've got to finish. It's good. I think we kind of cracked open the jar a little bit there, which is great. Let's keep on grappling with this stuff and chewing it over. Have a great week. God bless you.